Sophie, thank you so much for doing this and for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, I just want to get right into it. But before we do, you are from Toronto.
I am, but people who are actually from Toronto, they say like Toronto, like not Toronto.
Toronto.
Like get rid of the T, the last T on the, and then you got it.
Toronto. It's kind of like I'm from Atlanta, so people kind of say that too. Like with the when they say Atlanta, they say something else. I can't even pronounce it
Like
properly. I think my southern accent's gone
Atlanta,
away.
like NA.
Yes.
Okay.
It's pretty wild. That reminds me of something I want to get into later about the Toronto accent, but I definitely want to bring it back there because there was that viral video of the Toronto accent. Do you have a Toronto accent?
I don't think so. I can do one.
Try
I have
it.
like the Canadian bits where it's like I'll say bud or I'll say like sorry, like out instead of like out or like at, like with the A or like sorry, but that's it.
Accents are so wild to me. Okay, well, I have to definitely hear more of that. I am super excited to have you on because obviously I've been following your music for a minute and we've spoken, we've had some, good combos, but I want to kind of start by going over the fact that you've expressed the desire to inject genuine pop emotion, or excuse me, genuine emotion into the pop landscape. And I wanted to know more about how you feel about the sentiment and how you're kind of doing that, bring that into your music right now.
Oh, you did your research.
I have to. I'm the Nardwar. I'm like the new Nardwar.
I love it. Yeah. I guess it's such a pop is really anything that's popular. So when I'm
Sure.
saying pop, I just mean a lot of popular music, at least from my perspective, there is genuine emotion for sure. But there's not a lot of brutal honesty. A lot of it is sugarcoated through poems, and that's beautiful. Where I approach songwriting, and I actually take a lot of flack for it because people say you can't write these, what are these lyrics? You're just saying stuff. They don't rhyme, they don't sound nice together. But that's kind of the point. I don't want it to sound nice, and sure, maybe that affects my music, but you're still listening to it. You're still commenting on my videos, and the songs still have catchy melodies and they're still strong songs in my opinion, and I would hope not everyone on my team is a yes man,
Of
because
course.
I like honesty, and I guess that's where I mean when I say emotion, not to say that there aren't so many talented songwriters injecting like emotion and things they've gone through into the pop landscape, but it was more just that no sugarcoating. Straight to the point, today sucked versus being like, today was a gloomy day. Like, just say that difference is very key.
I see.
Yeah.
There is more of a deliberacy to what you're saying, and I wonder if that applies to your generation, which is something I want to get into, of course. Like, what are the specific nuances to just you being part of Gen Z and how that applies to your art? But before we go there, you also mentioned that a lot of your influences were millennial artists, Lady Gaga, Kesha, Avril Lavigne. How do you feel like they manifest in your music and style?
Sorry, my light just fell down here.
No, you're fine.
It's funny. I was born in 2004, right? I grew up with Lady Gaga, Poker Face on the radio. Dad was blasting Nirvana. Lady Gaga was all the rage. Kesha was all the rage. I mean, and I guess that was the music I grew up hearing and loved hearing. My dad, not to say Nirvana is from the early 2000s or is
Sure.
like that, but I'm just saying I grew up, Toronto's also a very diverse city. So I grew up hearing, and my parents, my dad was a musician, sort of a, like he wasn't not successful, but I guess he just didn't decide to take that as like his life path. He wanted a different life. So he didn't do music, but still loved it. My mom loved Pink Floyd. And God, the Grateful Dead. And I also listen to a bunch of like Led Zeppelin, AC/DC, just rock. And then that transformed into like more pop punk, Green Day. As like time went on, my dad would play that and like the grunge of the 90s as he was getting older, trying to stay with trends. You know how parents are.
Of course.
But so yeah, I grew up around a lot of different type of music. That reference, though, is just what is so nostalgic for me, is that early 2000s. And I think a lot of generations have that, where the generation you kind of just missed, you were still on the way in and hearing that music as you were growing up. Like, so that's why you see these 20-year, 30-year cycles of songs almost that have a similar sound, but it's like a rendition, at least in my opinion. That's what I see. So, long story short, that's where I'm coming from.
No, that makes perfect sense. It's interesting you mentioned that because I think it's profound that you say you kind of missed the tail end of one of those cycles or of one of those periods. I always framed it like you have high school for 4 years and those experiences within those 4 years, you know, they change every 4 years. So I feel like I came on the end, honestly, of the early 2000s. So even me, 2004, I was 14, 15, but long story short, it's kind of crazy because I feel like I didn't really get to experience the early 2000s. And it wasn't until I even got older that I started experiencing that same nostalgia. So the nostalgia that a lot of Gen Z's experience, I experienced, and maybe that's why I relate to the culture so much. So it's interesting.
Well, I also think you are young spirited and you keep up with the trends and I mean, you have to, especially in fashion, but you're also creating new trends, which is what I admire so much about your work.
I appreciate that, Sophie. Yeah, speaking of which, you design your own outfits. And of course, we've had a conversation about how you're doing so many amazing things in fashion, but you work closely with a seamstress. How does fashion play a role in your overall artistic expression?
Fashion is everything to me, especially considering it's become my own superpower. That's why the name Powers felt so right. It's my mom's last name, by the way.
See, I didn't realize that.
So my mom's last name is Powers Liptrap. My dad's last name is Laborski. Cool. Love you, Dad, but Powers is way cooler. And also, if it's applied to how I feel about art and fashion and music, it's like a superpower that almost became a defense mechanism for me when people would. I was never the prettiest girl. I was never, you know, the one who got like all the guys, but. One thing I did have was I had the best clothing, and all of my friends would come over and just raid my closet, even before I would design stuff. So they'd be like, where are you getting this? I spent hours finding these niche new upcoming brands from small artists supporting local, because I really do care about like that sort of thing. I've never been like, I don't think style is bought. Needless to say,
completely.
I've bought a lot of clothes in my life, so I know firsthand that sometimes a jacket that's thrifted will look better than a $3,000 jacket, and that's why fashion is so important to me, because it reflects not only the style that you present to people, but the style that you want to see yourself as. You're almost manifesting the best version of yourself through like an outfit. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. It feels like, well, okay. One thing that you do so incredibly well is you do present yourself as the main character. Like, it's very clear that you are the main character, you know?
I mean, thank you.
Of course.
I feel like that's such a meme at this point, though, where people are like, oh, my God, I'm such a main character. So... I can't take you seriously when you say that, but
completely.
I will take it as a compliment. So thank you.
I think it's something, it's something generational. It's like the way video game culture has proliferated. You know, it's so fascinating because people are kind of unafraid to compare themselves to, of course, video game characters, movie characters. It really feels like with social media back in the day, let's say 10 years ago, social media, when it was still a bit nascent in terms of Instagram, was still very much like putting your best self forward. Now, social media to me is expressing more so a character. And I think that that's way cooler because I've always like valued characters a lot more than I think just being the most pristine version of your existing kind of human self. You know, I'd rather be a Star Wars character personally, like given the choice. So that's kind of my two cents.
I fully agree. And I think, I'm not sure if anime has rotted my brain because I've watched so much of it. But what I'm taking in constantly and surrounded by, even on Pinterest, on my save boards or magazines that I've bought online, or like artist booklets, whatever. I've gotten a lot of that stuff from Japan, honestly. But yeah, it influences you. Your subconscious influences your consciousness, or your conscious brain. And you're right. Nowadays, especially with Marvel and so many, just such a presence of so many superhero characters, it makes you feel like you want to be the hero. It's inspiring. At least that's where I'm coming from.
No, where you're coming from is completely accurate. It's proliferated the culture so much. And that really does bring me to my next point. So you love anime. And you're an avid anime fan. And so the obvious question is, how does this interest in anime influence your visual and musical aesthetics?
Well, I get synesthesia very heavily. So when I'm writing a song, I'll already see it in colors. What texture is it? What is the room temperature? Where is it? It's the same for if I go to the dollar store and I see a bag of chips. The colors, okay, that's an outfit. I could look at like this mug in front of me right now and come up with, there's like a green mug in front of me, but I could come up with an outfit idea. So anime is the same thing. And because it's so colorful and so beautifully drawn and unlike anything I've ever seen before, growing up with North American television and North American artists, there's so many talented North American artists, don't get me wrong, but sure. I guess it's a different perspective and artistic style than I've ever seen before, which is what captivated me so much at the age. I think I avidly started watching when I was 15 or 16, and Death Note changed my life. That was my first anime I fully watched. And since then, it's been history.
Of course. Well, tell me about some of your favorite animes, because, I mean, I'm a huge anime fan. I would love to know. You love Death Note. What are some of the other ones?
Well, what are your favorites first, so I make sure you're not judging me?
Well, you know, I'll start with a movie. The original Vampire Hunter D movie.
Okay.
That came out in the 80s. I watched it as a kid, and that got me into it. Because I'm interested in kind of the hyper-violent, gothic aesthetic animes. Vampirism, you know, Hellsing, things like that. Trigun. I'm into those kind of the super edgy animes, I guess you could say. And, of course, growing up, I watched Dragon Ball Z because Toonami was huge when I was a kid. So I watched Dragon Ball Z, Gundam Wing, which was absolutely sick. But yeah, I think that's kind of where I'm at. So there's no judgment on my end.
Okay. Well, I do like some more gothic anime for sure as well. I mentioned Death Note. Mm-hmm. I love One Piece. I will probably never finish it, but I love it.
It's so long.
Hunter x Hunter. So many episodes. Yeah. Attack on Titan. I also really like sports animes. Like, God, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation. It's like Haikyuu. Haikyuu. It's like a volleyball anime. Also, like, Kuroko no Basket. It's a basketball anime. I used to play a lot of sports. Actually played volleyball and basketball, so it's super fun. I need to watch that soccer anime that just came out. It looks good. I think it's called like Blue Lock or something. But yeah, I also really like Sword Art Online and Attack on Titan and Jujutsu Kaisen. Oh, and Sword Eater.
Ooh.
Oh, Soul
I don't
Eater.
know Sword
Not Sword
Eater.
Eater. Sorry, Soul Eater.
Soul Eater. Okay.
Those are, there's too many to choose from. Those are like top 10.
Jujutsu Kaisen. Hopefully, I'm pronouncing that correctly. I've heard a lot of great things about that, so that's something I'm interested in. I did not realize there were so many sports animes. That's super fascinating. So you're really
Really?
nuanced. Yeah, you have like a lot of nuanced taste when it comes to anime.
Yeah, I honestly, it's weird though. I cannot watch romance anime. I can only read it in manga.
Of
So I've like
course.
read, I don't know if Maid Sama is like considered extreme romance, but I've like read that manga. I can't watch the show, and I'm sure the show is great. I don't know what it is though. I just need like show I need action like constantly. Otherwise my attention span, I think I can't do it. I can't even watch romance movies though, so it's not just anime.
Okay, do you let me paint a very specific scenario for you. Did you ever go to a bookstore where they had manga, like when you were younger?
Like a Scholastic event? Do they have those in America, Scholastic?
They did when I was a kid. I remember those.
Yeah, like I've been at like book fairs and stuff. I don't think I was ever the kind of kid though on my own time would be like, library.
Well, the reason I ask is because everything that was considered to be almost uncool when I was a kid, now granted, that wasn't necessarily my opinion. For example, when you go to the bookstore, there was always these kids who basically wore like bondage gear, Trip NYC style pants, and they were always reading manga in that section. But everyone, they were never afraid to do it. But now that's something that's cool. But like when I was a kid, it was so incredibly niche. But now you see how all that's kind of come full circle. It's so fascinating to me. That's why I was asking.
It's so mainstream, so I didn't really even consider being made. I still get made fun of by like people who aren't open to experiencing new things, but I'm not
Sure.
really trying to be friends with those people anyway, so.
Completely. No, you have to do what's authentic to you. And that's an interesting segue because we've kind of gone over anime, video games. Are you a gamer? Does that experience, how has that influenced you?
Let me just put these on real quick. No, I used to, after school, every single day with my middle school best friend, play Minecraft, I think for 4 hours. Like, creative mode. We built like an entire candy land of castles, and honestly, it was very impressive. I would go up to the summer and go to the cottages in the summer, also when I was like 10 or 12 or even like 16, and just play Minecraft the whole road trip up. So I really loved that game. Haven't played in a minute. Played a little bit of Valorant. But other than those two, I'm pretty inexperienced. My brothers used to make me play Fortnite with them all the time though. And they're big gamers. So like that's kind of the extent of my gaming. But I'm gonna start streaming on Twitch, like stuff other than me gaming, like live sessions and writing songs. I enjoy watching streamers game.
Very cool. It's a newer phenomena. Not that new, but certainly something that, if that was something that existed like when I grew up, I would have absolutely done it. 'Cause I remember when I was a kid watching YouTube videos of people playing video games, obviously pre-recorded. So it really is a natural progression that people would just watch other people play video games, or to your point, just do anything such as songwriting. Maybe even making food. It's very fascinating to me, actually.
It's crazy how much access we have to each other's lives. Like, you know stuff about people you wouldn't dream of knowing 10 years ago.
And, that's a good point. Tell me more.
Sorry, that's just like a random thought I just had, but...
No, please.
What about you, though? Are you a big gamer, really, would you say?
I used to be. I wish I still was, but I used to be. Those games that I played, though, when I was a teenager are really the foundation for what I do today. Devil May Cry, Metal Gear Solid, Resident Evil. But if I were to really summarize like what my aesthetic is, it's pretty much Devil May Cry, except obviously more nuanced with my own authenticity. But that's basically it. I love all of that neo-gothic aesthetic and a lot of silver. I mean, I've been obsessed with that since I was really little. Just that combination of silver, red, and black. That's basically everything for me.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely see you as those colors. That's also like another thing. I like see people as colors. And you're definitely black and red. I don't know about silver. That's an interesting one. But
I like that.
Sorry if that's weird.
It's not weird at all because I love Darth Maul from Star Wars. He's like my favorite character with the red and black face paint. Well, in his case, that's actually his natural complexion, but the character from episode one. I'm not sure how familiar you are with that, but it's really sick.
I've only seen two of the Star Wars movies.
Yeah, that's when I could start getting really nerdy because I could start getting into the comic books, but...
You like Star Wars a lot?
I love Star Wars, Sophie, I have to admit. The movies never really were my shtick, but the video games, the comic books, that was like my nerd culture growing up, was just getting in. There's a thing called Wikipedia, which is basically Wikipedia just for Star Wars. And I would just read it on my phone for fun and just learn about the lore. I was a huge nerd. I just didn't try to project that. It wasn't until I got older that I was just comfortable being like, whatever. If I'm a nerd, I'm a nerd. Great. So,
I mean, that's kind of a flex. I would say, like, knowing Wikipedia, I didn't even know that existed.
I'm telling you, go down that rabbit hole and I'm going to tell you why. You will start getting into a lot of interesting fashion rabbit holes and things like that. And why I suggest doing that is because I'm more so interested in transitioning kind of to this next question. Mm-hmm. And this is about the relationship between Gen Z and millennial fashion, style and nostalgia. Okay. And this is something I was so excited about because you draw so heavily when it comes to fashion. Again, kind of touching back on that millennial nostalgia. I would like to know, what are your feelings on millennial motifs and who and kind of where do you draw a lot of your inspiration from the early 2000s specifically?
I want to make sure I get this right. So give me a sec.
Of course.
It's funny. You say like who, but most of the... people, oh no, I guess it was also people. Okay, in terms of shows,
yeah,
I actually get told a lot, like, oh my god, you're so much like her, like Jenny Humphrey from Gossip Girl. And now I'm gonna sound pretentious being like, oh my god, you're so much like her, but I've drawn a lot from her style, and it's so funny how she's also a designer. Also, my mom, dude, she's got the coolest style. Like, always growing up, both of my parents, actually, they dress like rock stars. Like,
yeah,
my mom would never dare wear Lululemon or a dress in her life. I've never seen her in either of those. She's like real tomboy, grunge, decked out in like R13 Chrome Hearts, that style. I could go on.
That's sick.
My dad was similar, but my mom just styled him. So like credit to her, probably.
Sorry. Of course.
And then, yeah, Lady Gaga and Nicki Minaj in that very avant-garde style that I grew up seeing, where it was eras and it was looks and it was over the top. That lady wore a meat dress. Like, come on.
That's what I
remember seeing. Also Avril, love her style, like early days. And that early days, emo, Trip NYC, MySpace era, I guess, has influenced me.
Yeah.
In terms of actual films, I'd say the film Twilight has also influenced me a little bit. Got a little bit more like fairy grunge from it, gothic from it, because it's my favorite movie series. And I would say those are the main influences. Nicki Minaj also pulled out all the stops in the early 2000s. Gotta give respect. Yes. But yeah.
So I remember it. Those days well. So who are your favorite designers?
Okay. So many. Oh my gosh. Obviously I have a lot of respect for Rick Owens. As mm-hmm. like everyone would probably say when it's who are your favorite designers.
Of course. Like, I know. I at risk of sounding cliche, but yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
Just such a pioneer. Okay. I've really been liking Dion Lee. I've really been liking the brand Domenico, if I'm mispronouncing that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Laquan Smith. Love. Kim, if you know, I'd assume you know them, what they're doing.
I don't. I'm so out of it. I exist kind of in my own world, and then I have the two designers I love, or maybe three, and then I'm just like, okay, work, 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 and I'm so not in the industry, you know?
I also have a lot of respect, not even for just, like, designers of brands, but, like, costume designers of films, and,
yes.
Movies, I'll always go after watching a movie and look into who the costume. I think I have a folder on Instagram saved of over 300 independent costume designers, and like I love my costume designer so much, Becky. But like, if for some reason someday she can't do my designs, I have like 300 other insanely talented seamstresses and designers and costume makers. I could pull up my screen and like list off a few names. I don't want to get locked out of the session. I don't know them by heart, but I just like love looking into that after watching something.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I want to stay on this topic a little bit longer, because that, Sophie, is literally what got me into fashion. It wasn't because I had a background in fashion or anything. It was because my favorite movies growing up, there was a singular costume designer, and I don't want to mispronounce her name. She has a Slavic name. She was the costume designer for Blade, the original Blade in 1998, the original Fast and Furious in 2000. No, the original, although Tokyo Drift is my favorite, the one from 2001.
Oh, the OG, OG, okay.
The OG, OG. And then the third movie that really resonated with me is, are you familiar with XXX with Vin Diesel in 2002?
Not.
I was so young when these movies came out. But why they're so significant is the costume designs. XXX, for example, it takes place in Prague in the Czech Republic. Think a lot of shearling coats. Basically, Vin Diesel's style in these movies were incredible. But Blade, I'm sure you're very familiar with, just from all the blood raves and everyone referencing that kind of gothic aesthetic nowadays. But those movies were seared into my mind from like the age of 8 years old even. And so that's what really made me want to get into fashion, was costume design. It wasn't even, you know, anything dealing with the fashion in general. So I love that you said that.
Wow. That's so, I guess I'm the same. I grew up reading a lot of comic books, actually. So it's funny you said you loved reading Star Wars comics. I loved reading Marvel and DC comics. Dick Grayson, Damian Wade, so many just cool characters came from those books that we haven't even seen on the screen yet.
Of course.
And that really, the superhero outfits and the way they were drawn, it's similar. It kind of, that's what, why I think I like anime so much too, because it reminds me of those real characters. Every character in an anime is drawn like they're the main character, is what I like.
Yeah.
Whereas in the Marvel comics, it's like the superheroes are obviously the main focus. They're like drawn that way. But I just like, especially in this individualistic society where everyone's so much more encouraged towards self-expression and to be themselves, and my generation specifically.
Yes.
It's really, really refreshing seeing animes and superhero movies and even just costume design in general on live television and live movies like Dune. Amazing costume design.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So that's just an example of, you know, so there's just so much cool art out there, dude. Like, I could ramble on about it for hours.
No, that please do, because that brings me to a few interesting points that you mentioned. The first one being, who are your favorite Marvel, DC comic book characters in general?
Okay. Basic, but gotta go with Harley Quinn. I was Harley Quinn for Halloween one year. Even this looks like Harley Quinn. Like, just who she is as a person reminds me a little bit of myself.
Sure.
I would also say, yeah, Dick Grayson. I would also say Jason Todd.
Robin 1 and 2. Interesting. Yep. Okay.
I would also say, I love Venom.
Sick.
just for the aesthetics, you know?
Sure.
Just really cool. And in terms of female, there's a lot. I would say Harley Quinn is like my favorite female, and then I used to love Wonder Woman, though. I had I named my pet fish Wonder Woman. I had a quilt, a Wonder Woman quilt, growing up, always on my bed. Yeah. What about you?
Well, I like your selections a lot more, honestly. Mine, again, it goes back into kind of that Trigun, that kind of hyper-violent, you know, kind of lone wolf aesthetic, the Punisher. Everyone that had a chip on their shoulder, Magneto, who I took like a lot of inspiration from, I always felt like
the one.
You know, he was such an anti-hero.
He's a little bit of like probably committed arson like a million times.
A lot of things. He was pretty wild.
He reminds me of Aaron Yeager.
Aaron Yeager was from which anime?
Attack on Titan, if you've okay. seen it.
I know the last season just ended, if I'm correct, but I haven't seen past season 2.
I need to get caught up on it. I don't know if they released the season 4 part 2, or if it's just the season 4 part 1 that's been released.
Well, definitely after this, after our conversation at some point this weekend, I'm going to be watching a ton of anime, because you've made me reinvigorated for watching anime for sure. So,
oh my gosh. That. Okay, watch Attack on Titan and let me know what you think. It's crazy.
It's done. I'm definitely going to.
Just,
you know, so you brought up something interesting. You mentioned self-expression of Generation Z. And I think I don't want to pigeonhole you specifically as an artist being a Gen Z artist, because I think that's very reductionist. But what do you think are the positive attributes of you being a Gen Z artist and how that relates to your self-expression?
Well, I would say positive attributes are I know the consumer because I am the consumer.
Sure.
I'm 19. The people buying my clothes would probably be around my age versus someone of previous times where, you know, coming in. And nowadays, it's so much easier to start a company, get funding. You know, we even talked about that. And thank you for the advice. You offered so much amazing advice. And I have a lot of respect for you just for taking the time to speak with me. Because a lot of people, you know, it's almost a disadvantage being a Gen Z designer, because you get people who've been in the game for a while, like yourself, who could almost look down on a Gen Z designer very easily because, you know, it's like you're a rookie. You completely disacknowledge that, or just, you know, you didn't acknowledge the fact that I'm new to this and you made me feel seen and heard. So thank you.
Of course.
And individualism, is that a word? Individualism. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Self-expression. We see brands like, Heaven by Marc Jacobs, Popping Out of the Woodworks. There's so many other brands nowadays that are looking more and more like what those superheroes and what those main characters would dress like, because everyone wants to be a main character nowadays, especially when you have social media and an online presence and you are representative of yourself. I mean, there's a lot of people who don't want any online presence or to be a main character too, so I can't say everyone.
Sure.
But there is definitely more room for self-expression, artistically, sexually, even academically. I don't know. It feels like nowadays people care a lot more about, sorry, I meant to say people care less about what people think of them and more about what they think of themselves. Does that add up?
It does. It does. It's kind of a level of how you wish to be perceived. People are more cognizant of how they wish to be perceived nowadays, no matter what it is. But then to your point, you know, it's invigorating for me because thank you, first of all, for the kind words. But I feel the reason that I never became jaded, and I truly mean this, is because I'm always interested in what's new. Like, I'm always listening to new music. I'm always trying to, like, relive, you know, or rediscover or just live life. Like, I'm never going to get to a point where I'm like, okay, things were better here or things were better in the 2000s or this or that. I will never be like that because there's so much amazing stuff happening today that I'm almost like, dude, I wish that this level of self-expression existed even when I was a teenager. I truly do. So I'm just constantly finding ways to be reinvigorated. So when you and I have a conversation about art or fashion, I'm constantly reinvigorated. And I feel like it's just pushing me to discover new things, as opposed to being like, oh, I have it figured out. I have nothing figured out. I just take it day by day, you know? So it's interesting to me.
You seem like you've got it all figured out. I'll tell you that. But
I appreciate that perception. I really do.
You're so right, though. For example, Drake. How do you think he's been able to maintain such a prominent status for the past 10, almost 15 years now?
I have no idea. Tell me.
Ever is new and tapped in and hot. He's also tapped in with and learning from to stay relevant. And it's the same thing with fashion. It's the same thing in business. How are you constantly evolving? And, you know, as a society nowadays, also, we want new. Our attention spans are short. We're scrolling through screens. Okay, on to the next video, on to the next video. It's almost like that needs to be applied in business, in music, in culture more.
That makes perfect sense. So you're saying, so somebody could look at it as a negative to say, you know, we consume too quickly. Like, everything turns over so fast nowadays, but maybe it's to our benefit, because if we can apply that to our practice, then we're constantly evolving. We're kind of constantly progressing. I like that a lot.
There's definitely benefits and like negative factors that come with obviously such a fast consumerism pattern that society's fallen into today. I myself am guilty of it. I try to avoid fast fashion, but it's like, that doesn't mean I'm avoiding like fast music, I want to say, where it's like, I'll listen to a TikTok song for 10 seconds and then search that song up. And it's like, oh, I'm not going to listen to the whole song though. I'll just listen to it saved on my TikTok audios and then listen to another TikTok audio for like another 20 seconds. Do you ever do that? Like, you save a TikTok audio just to like kind of listen to it versus hearing the whole song?
Not the audio, but I saved the snippet, for example, yesterday of a Playboy Cardi cover with a guitar. And I just listened to that snippet of 10 seconds on repeat. Like, I can't even imagine myself doing that, but it's literally a kid playing guitar and covering Playboy Cardi. And I'm like, yes. And then I do it again and again. I'm like, dude, this is taking over my mind. I feel pretty wild, but yeah, I pretty much do that.
Yeah, exactly though. But that proves my point. Like,
yes,
fashion trends and on sounds on TikTok and trends in the fashion world as well used to be happening once every 3 months. Then it's every month. Then it's every week. Now it's like every 4 days. I feel like there's a new song or a big piece. And fashion can kind of have a little bit more of a lifespan too, because sure, there are ways to reinvigorate it into the public by doing shows, and there's ways to do that with music too, going on tours, etc. But if you're not doing that and you're just putting it out, everyone will be amazed with it for maybe a week, and then it's on to the next. It's not a month long journey or a seasonal journey anymore. At least I don't think it is.
I think you have a better idea. You're in, like I mentioned to you before, you're in the work, meaning you're so close to what's happening that I think you have a better understanding. Someone like me, I always am referencing what came before to better understand it, right? So I'm thinking, well, on MySpace, on Pure Volume, we're talking, I was so little on Pure Volume. That's how we discovered music, right? It was like literally the prime golden years of emo were on like Pure Volume and MySpace. And right, that sat with you, to your point. I mean, when an album came out, that sat with you for 6 months, maybe a year. So it's like, to your point, things are so rapid fire, rapid paced. I can't keep up because just my brain, like my neurodivergent brain, cannot fixate for long enough to, you know, basically understand it. So I'm trying.
I agree with you. You keep making me laugh because, like, you're taking the words right out of my mouth. I'm, like, popping on a podcast and nothing to say right now. but, yeah, no, especially nowadays, nobody listens to albums unless you're a really big fan of the artist, in my opinion. So without a fan base already established, even if you have somewhat of a fan base, it's really hard to put out an album, even to put out a whole collection, versus just doing it piece by piece until you build up a fan base and people who would buy that full collection, until the audience is there. And correct me if I'm wrong, but nowadays in fashion, do you think this sort of model of limited drops and versus the old and a whole collection, letting it breathe and live in a world before on to the next, would you prefer the new limited drop a month, or would you prefer the seasonal, okay, this is the collection, that's all you get?
I'd prefer the limited drop, and I'll tell you why. Just as you related the collection to the album, to your point, the limited drop is the single, putting out successive limited drops. Now, the prestige and the ambiance of fashion is in the collection. It's when you can reference a Grail piece, like, this was from Rick Owens, spring, summer 2014. And then you have this moment and it just becomes so iconic. But you have to remove yourself from that nostalgia and say, wait a second, I need to think like a business person and not like someone who's just, you know, predicated on nostalgia, which is what I'm guilty of. So I think maybe today, if somebody said, okay, what would you choose? I would only do limited drops. So I might just do a really cool hoodie. And yes, it's just a hoodie. There's things far more complicated, but recently I did kind of a technology integrated hoodie. And I just said, what's the coolest thing that I just want to wear today? Drop that. And then once it was sold out, okay, that's it. And the capital investment is much less than obviously going into a collection. And I think it gives you the opportunity to do more. Because as you know, collections take a long time.
I know, that's very true. And that was the technology hoodie you did with Matt, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
That hasn't come out yet?
Yeah, I released it. I didn't do all of them with the integrations within them. And that was mostly just due to, obviously, the budget for something like that. But with the NFC chip, it was incredible. Because for me, is like a glimpse into the future. Like the way you scan it, of course, is
completely. But so are you. So you put two and two together. It's like,
well, I'm going to blow your mind then, because that is the beginning of something I had a conversation about recently. And I want to get your opinion on this, Sophie. Okay. Basically, I spoke to Alex Castillo of Neurosity, And Neurosity has done some amazing brain computer interfaces. And they did a project with Grimes where they collaborated on a brain computer interface. And Alex and I spoke about what it might be like to take the brain computer interface called the crown. You put it on your head and it can actually connect with, let's say, a technologically infused garment to change the actual garment's characteristics in real time based on your brain waves. If you can imagine that. So you think it and then that, it applies it.
That's like some military changing technology.
Yes.
No, like seriously, you could sell that to the military. You could sell that to film production and even just the everyday person. Wow. That would be game changing for sure.
I think you'll be doing this. That's why I wanted to relate it back, of course, to what Matt is working on and what Alex is working on. These are all pieces to this dynamic puzzle that I think you actually are going to be the recipient of. When you look out 10 years, I think you'll be doing these things. Like the things that I'm thinking about now, you'll really be doing. I'll be doing them as well. Hopefully I'll live forever, but it's just interesting. These technology-infused garments are really the future in terms of how you can change their characteristics in terms of heating, cooling. But again, it's all going to be algorithmic from a computer brain interface. It could just be these could actually detect brain waves, for example, one day, and through machine learning and through artificial intelligence could, you know, make assumptions about you. And that I find interesting too.
They know too much. That's all I'm going to say.
Like you said.
That is so, it's so surreal to think that now that I'm lost for words because it seems so impossible that you'd be able to essentially make the invisibility cloak from Harry Potter.
But exactly. We're
very close to that point. And it's closer like you think.
Completely. It's super fascinating. Yes. Basically, optical camouflage, I think, is the term that was used in Metal Gear Solid, the video game. But it's literally the Harry Potter cloak. And it reflects the light external to, you know, so what's going on around you.
I actually saw a design, I think it was from 2004, from this Japanese designer. I can't pronounce and I forget his name. I could search it up though. But he invented this, he called it actually like the invisibility cloak or something of that,
yes,
that sort. Have you seen this design of this jacket? And there's a projector that is behind him and it's a technically like a see-through reflective jacket, but the projector is being used behind so that it looks like he's just completely enveloped himself into the background, and it's just he has this jacket on because it's actually projecting the background onto his jacket. It's from 2002.
Vaguely.
It's crazy, but it's, we're gonna be able to do that soon without projector is basically what you're telling me, and that's why I'm like lost for words. That's crazy.
Well, I want to get your opinion on this before we revert back to music, because I still want to touch on some things, of course, related to music. But before we do that, I want to know, looking out maybe, let's say 5 or 10 years, you're well immersed in fashion. What are some of your dream pieces, collections? It could be as imaginative as you want, as we're talking about technology and things like this. Yeah, Ghost in the Shell.
I already know what I want. That's a good one. excuse me. I would say have my next 5 albums and collections. I know what I want them all to look like. And they kind of go hand in hand. They're each within the same universe. So I would release each collection around the release of the album. And that's sort of the era. So it really is a reflection of me. And one of my favorite things to do would be just to sell clothing in a very unconventional place. Like, I don't know why clothing isn't being sold in vending machines. I don't know why it's not being sold in office buildings. It's like, yeah, people are trying to do work, but take over a whole building with a company just in front of, or inside of the elevator. Just have it like on a retractable thing. Have you seen like the Clueless closet where you can just pull the head, like it wraps around, kind of like that, like stuff like that where you can actually make the outfit digitally before you buy it. You can mix it stuff. I want to be able to actually do that in real time at a store and online. I also really think that unisex clothing needs to be a necessity, because why are we still categorizing it just for men and just for women?
Mm-hmm.
And I really want extra petite sizes. I'm so happy that we have a lot more plus size support now. But I myself, as a petite person, I have a really hard time finding brands that I fit into unless they're from like overseas. So I think I would love to get some support on that end. And those are sort of my main goals. I would love to have a fashion show, of course, everyone does. But that's sort of something I'm leaving to the universe's hands.
Of course. No, 100%. That is interesting, some of the points that you brought up. Clothing vending machines do sound awesome. I can imagine some sort of nanotechnology happening behind the scenes, and it constructs it, and then it just kind of like the Iron Man wristlet or the Spider-Man, you know, just takes over your body, basically. That'd be sick.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's further than what I was even thinking.
It's going to be crazy in 10 years from now. Well, before we get into futurism, because I want to talk to you a little bit more about that within this conversation, futurism and things of this nature, I want to touch back on music. So, Sophie, your single Nosebleed specifically touches on societal expectations and emotional experiences of Gen Z. Could you elaborate on the process of writing Nosebleed and what message you hope to convey to people?
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of my writing is just who I am. Honestly, I should inject more of what the listener wants versus what I want to hear. Mm-hmm. But that's really one of the ways how I keep it honest. So I honestly was just saying, you wake up, you study, you get good grades, you get money. What is everyone constantly talking about? Everyone constantly focused about? Like, what are we missing here?
Sure.
But at the same time, it was written with satire, because I'm saying in the chorus, yeah, we don't care at all. Just another phase and another Adderall. People were so mad. You're encouraging drugs. You're, you know, not, this isn't a good stance for young people to have. I'm like, I'm literally talking about how bad it is that, oh, just another Adderall. Why is that so casual? Why are we missing that? Why are we not thinking before, oh, I gotta go work today, and I gotta go take my Adderall before work, and then take it when I'm home, and then take it at lunch, and also have this other thing. Like, why is that so normalized?
Yeah, I agree.
So it's kind of like just being like, oh, yeah, like, whatever, we gotta do this, we gotta do that. It's like very, like, blank slate minded. And, or absent-minded, I should say.
Sure.
So the writing process just stems from that.
Mm-hmm.
Though I freestyle a lot of stuff. I'll work with Mike, my producer, and Cam, my co-writer. And normally it's just the three of us. I'll freestyle melodies, harms, and a lot of the words that I freestyle will end up staying. And then Cam will go and, like, help me rewrite some of it based off what I've already said. And Mike makes a beat, and that's kind of how we roll.
I love it. So, in keeping with that train of thought, you've talked about wanting your music to make people feel validated and powerful. So, can you share more about your approach to those specific concepts and how you aim to evoke those emotions?
Definitely. I've always been frustrated with the fact that society labels artists often by the emotions that their music makes. Oh, you're a ballad artist. Oh, you make sad music. Oh, you make like aggressive, angry music. Why can't you make all of it? And we're seeing artists nowadays do that way more. Doja Cat, not to say that artists didn't do that in the past, of course, but you know, an artist would have like their one-off song. It wasn't what they were known for.
Yeah.
Take what I'm saying with a grain of salt when I say what they're known for, because like everyone's known for different things. For me, I just want that thing to be invoking emotion, whether you're extremely angry, extremely sad, extremely happy, got a song for that. Extremely want to feel confident, like a boss bitch, got a song for that. It's not just one-sided. Maybe the public will go and label me as just I make angry music and that's all I make, as they've done to almost every other artist that have a lot of more dimension than that. But I was at least trying to break that barrier.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. I mean, you've blended, you know, various genres. So, for example, you've talked about hyperpunk, alt-pop, glitch rock. You know, how do you approach genre in your music in general? And, you know, how do you feel, what inspires you to make these unique combinations?
Before I answer that, I do want to say sorry for the long-winded answers.
No, please. Encouraged.
You are asking such great questions, and I'm just trying to answer them in the best way I can. But perfect. That being said, when I approach combining genres, it's probably similar to you with fashion. It's figuring out what your favorite people have made and not copying them, but taking your favorite elements within what they've made. So, oh, I'll steal this from this person, I'll borrow this from this person, steal this from this person. And then by the time you have combined all of those elements into your own sound, you haven't stolen anything, because it's so different and unlike anything a single one of those artists would have put out. So really, for me, I focus heavily on the production and the melodies. Lyrics are like the last thing, very last thing. When I go about combining genres, okay, if the beat is more new metal, or sorry, not new metal, if the beat is more hyperpop, or hyperpop industrial, what if I rap over it? What if I don't do a hyperpop sound vocal over it? And that's kind of how you add a twist to sort of contrast the landscape of within the song.
What is your approach to live performances, and you know, how do you translate the energy of your recorded music to the stage?
Oh, I love performing so much. Just feels like I'm in my element, so I don't really have to translate the energy. It's just there. I know what you mean though when you say translate. It's like, how do you portray that character within the song in a live setting? So yes. I would say I grew up as a theater kid, and I did a lot of acting. Each song is a different character, and that character is almost like a different superhero. That's why it's connected to a different color and a different location setting. I just literally sing the song, perform that song as to how I imagine that character within the song would act in buying groceries or in their everyday life.
Like, oh, interesting.
So Nosebleed, for example, that's like, I see that character going to the mall and just hanging out with a bunch of friends, maybe smoking in the library, maybe a little bit depressed, doesn't really talk much. If someone gets in their way, they would push them, like, kind of like Daria, if you know that character.
Yeah.
Like, fuck you, get away. And that's why when I perform that live, I'm like, yeah, we don't care at all. Like, it's more like laid back.
100%.
Same thing goes for my other songs, but that's an example.
Well, touching back on music as a whole, who are some people you would love to collaborate with in the future?
I would love to collaborate with Grimes. She actually commented on a few of my TikToks. Like, can I? She asked to spin one of my songs. I sent it to her, but I haven't heard back from her yet. I do really think where her head is at, though, similar to yours. I love how you both are supporting upcoming artists and you're very tapped into the current landscape and also the future, which is so important. I would love to also collaborate with, God, so many talented artists out there. I think it would be really cool, though, to collaborate with someone super opposite of my sound, like something super left field. I've been listening to a lot of rap recently, like UK drill, like Stormzy and Central C. Like someone like that would be sick. Also, love Pink Panthers and Billie Eilish. The personal faves of mine at the moment. But yeah.
Well, that makes perfect sense to me. Now, there's a lot of synergy, I think, with all of those artists. In particular, I would love to see you do something with Grimes. That'd be epic.
That would be so cool.
Yeah, and that really brings me into the final part of our conversation because you mentioned a word that I love very much, which is simply future. And I want you to kind of describe to me your thoughts on futurism and what I mean by that as it relates to aliens, as it relates to, new technologies, all of these things, because I'm obsessed. I want to know kind of where your head is at with everything related to futurism.
Oh gosh. How about I let you start this one off and ask you how you feel about futurism, and then I'll give my two cents.
Of course. The first thing that comes to mind for me is being where you're at. If I were to look at my 19-year-old self and I had these things such as artificial intelligence, brain computer interfaces, ChatGPT, of course, all these sorts of things, my mind would have been blown. I had to wait so long. So I see it in your generation. You have these things at your disposal and it's only going to get quicker and quicker and quicker. That's so fascinating.
It is fascinating. That's why I wanted to get your two cents because a lot of people are really not comfortable with AI, which is totally understandable. It's a newer thing. You're so forward-thinking, but even for the most forward-thinking people that I've met, still are uncomfortable with AI. Even I'm a little bit
Sure.
uncomfortable. That could replace both of our jobs, like in a few years easily. So it's scary for sure. But I also think it's like a weapon. You just have to put it in the right hands. Make sure it doesn't get into the wrong hands, which hope it isn't already. But
We'll see.
I think there's a lot we can learn from technology. I think it, if used correctly, is going to change the way that artists create art and the way people operate their jobs. Maybe we have to do less. Maybe we can live more and work less. Maybe we have to do more because there are more tasks expected of us because there's this tool of AI to help us. So companies fire more people, having robots help. Maybe the economy is affected, or maybe certain people benefit. It's all very, there's no black or white. It's all gray. My perspective is optimistic because I think if you approach something with an optimistic mindset, it's more likely to end positively already. Just that's because that's where your head's at versus negatively. It feels like you're dooming yourself from the start. That's kind of how I feel about technology. I want to incorporate it for sure into my designs. I would love to do some AI music programs where I can actually learn about it more. The only thing that I really don't know how I feel about is the neurochip. I don't think I would ever get that in my brain. How do you feel about that?
I'm glad you mentioned that because there's going to be two roads you can take. The first road is the invasive road, which again is the Neuralink, which is an implant. And then the other one is, for example, the company Neurosity with Alex, whereby it's a non-invasive brain
Yeah.
computer interface.
Okay, the non-invasive one sounds great. I'm like, sign me up. But inside of me, I don't think I can do it. I couldn't even
I
get an
agree.
IV. I've seen some of my friends get those in like their arms. I can do that.
It freaks me out too. I kind of like seeing my blood being drawn, though. I'm kind of weird like that. I don't enjoy the actual where they
Oh,
implant
you're
it, but then when
a freak.
I know, I'm like, oh, that's cool. I'm like, vampirism. But
You gotta
anyways.
study some good vampirism themed animes and like gothic animes from like the classics. Like Ghost in a Shell obviously is like more of a classic, but that
Sure.
era.
I'm going to send you Vampire Hunter D. And then there was Vampire Hunter D 2000, which is basically the sequel, which came out, I'm assuming, in 2000. It's very Y2K. You'll like it. I promise.
It didn't come out in the year 2000, that'd be like kind of funny.
I know. Well, Sophie, I got to tell you, thank you so much for doing this interview. This has been really insightful talking about art, fashion, music, basically everything that you and I love. So I'm so grateful you did this today.
Oh, I'm so grateful you had me on. I have been obviously following you for a while as well, and when I decided to reach out, you responded with such kindness, and I think that we are going to be chatting about this a lot more often past just this podcast. I hope I didn't ramble too much, so
No.
we can save some of those conversations for later.
Well, we'll definitely do at some point a follow-up conversation. But yeah, of course. Thank you so much. And thank you again for doing this, Sophie. This has been fantastic.
Yeah, thank you, and I hope you have a really good day.
Thank you. You too.
All right.